Welcome to the Southside Report. I am Mario Scalise, coming to you from the city of Chicago, and in California, a Sox fan, Jason Gage. What's up, Jace?
What's up, Mario? It's good to be back. It's good to have, after a two-week vacation, we get to discuss a lot. We have a lot of things going for the show. We got some rants. I promise you, people, I will be delivering some big-time rants. Hopefully this week, Mario will be awake to maybe respond to the rants or have a rant of his own. We'll talk a little bit about the bullpen, the pitching staff, the starting pitching in general, the offense. I think we're going to put some big folks into the offense this week. And Ozzie Guillen's going to get some mention. And in general, we think it's going to be an action-packed, fired-up edition of the newly formed Southside Report. You should check out the site, soxtalk.com/Southside Report, because you can get a flash player and listen to our stuff right then and there. And you can thank Mr. Scalise for that one.
Yeah. And hopefully we could be back next week and the week after. So we'll just say that we've been on a two-week break just to kind of make it seem like it was planned all along, because we were tired after doing two consecutive shows, and that could get on you. It could wear on you very quickly. We got to get into the Sox and, of course, their struggles as a whole in the year, mostly stemming from the offense. But these past two games with the Chicago Cubs in the Crosstown Classic, if you want to call it that, it's gotten some fans a little bit edgy, a little bit upset, because the Sox have dropped the last two, and they've dropped it with their bullpen blowing some big leads and their offense not necessarily clicking completely. Go ahead and rant, because I know this is what you want to do.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is what I do. I see people, I see what they say, and I call them morons for it. And what I have seen in the last 48-hour span is absolute, utter, petty bullshit. I see people saying that it's a fire sale time, that the White Sox should trade everyone. I've seen people say the season's over. Oh, God, we have no chance. I see people compare this to the passionless White Sox teams of the early 2000s that could only hit. I've seen so many ridiculous comparisons and rants that I have to fire up one of my own. All of you ladies and gentlemen, all of you people that are saying these stupid comments, sit down, shut up, watch the baseball, enjoy it. Because you are the same idiots that earlier on in the season said Bobby Jenks was garbage. Listen, newsflash, Bobby Jenks is one of the best pitchers out of the bullpen in baseball. He's one of the best closers in baseball. He's got a 3.18 ERA. He saves almost every single game he's in. Bobby Jenks is great. If it was up to you, Chards, he'd be down in AAA. I mean, I'm sick and tired of hearing these stupid comments of this team being poor. This team has one of the best starting rotations in baseball. And that goes five deep. And when you have that, you have the ability to win. Not only do you have the ability to win in the regular season, but you damn well have the ability to win in the postseason. They also have a very good shortstop, defensively speaking, and he's been a lot better offensively. So you have a little bit of defense. You got Creedy over there third, Canerco at first, so they can flash the leather. You have Darren Erstad in center field, who, whether he's hitting or not, is still a very good defensive center fielder. So the defense is still there. And that is what you have. You have defense and pitching. The hitting needs to come around away. The bullpen, yes, it needs to come around. But don't write this team off. Don't be stupid. Don't be asinine. Because I will remember all you idiots that say these things. Because I remember in 2005 when you same idiots were saying very similar things about this team. And how it was done. And how this and that and that. And you bitched him on about the offense. And you know what happened? Oh, I know what happened. They got some rings. They're called World Series Championship rings. And this baseball team, this team in 2007 is capable of winning a World Series. I'm not saying they will win a World Series. We all know I'm sticking to my predictions of the Angels-Dodgers World Series. But let me tell you, all you people writing this team off, you will hear the end of it, and you should have big smiles on your face because you will be wrong, and you get to enjoy it to watch some White Sox playoff baseball.
I don't think the Sox are a potential World Series team this year. It doesn't mean they're a bad team. I just don't think that they have what it takes to actually win the World Series this year. But I will say this. When you go back preseason, you know, March, February, January, the main concern going into the season was the pitching staff. And I wasn't concerned about that. I was concerned more or less with the bullpen. But a lot of people said, the Sox pitching staff is not the same. You know, Contreras is getting up there. Burley's getting up there in age. Burley struggled last year. You know, what are you going to get from John Danks? And Javier Vasquez can only throw five innings. There was more concern going into that starting rotation and that pitching staff as a whole than that offense. Nobody was concerned about the offense. Nobody thought that Canerco and Dye and Creedy would be batting 200 or around 200. Nobody thought Iguchi would struggle like he has, or Przinski, or, you know, whatever the case. Nobody thought that. People thought, though, that this rotation would struggle. People thought, though, that Darren Erstad would be a bust. And it hasn't happened. And as bad as the bullpen has been over these past week or so, overall, it's been surprising to me. So, yeah, you know what? The Sox, offensively, they're not playing well. But all things considered, they are still at 500. And they're at 500 with many things not really at full force. And it's because of this rotation. It's because of that defense. So you have to look, and a lot of people brought up this point this past week, not Sox fans, because Sox fans as a whole have, most of them have been kind of a little bit edgy and a little bit complaining, but a lot of people outside the White Sox who are just baseball people in general have said, when you look at guys like Canerico and Dye and Creedy, these guys are professional hitters. These guys have proven that they could hit in the past. Eventually, they're going to come around, or you have to assume that they're going to come around. And when they do, it is a dangerous team. Or could be a dangerous team. My concern right now is not the next 2-3 months. My concern is coming into September. Because if this offense does get it together, if Canerico does get it together and Dye and everything else, you know that they're going to get in the hot streak. You know they're going to win a ton of games, especially combined with that pitching staff, with that rotation. But I'm afraid is, you know what, maybe August, maybe September, maybe their struggles start happening again. Because these offensive struggles are now going in to the middle of May. I think what are we on? We are May 17th. We're on May 17th. This is maybe outside of maybe the first 2 weeks of the season. Maybe the Sox scored a little bit, but this is now for 1 month now, over 1 month in which the Sox offense has been very, very bad. So I have no doubt that the offense is going to come around, but I do question come September if the offense isn't going to go into a slump again. And that's really where I'm concerned with. But as far as saying the team's going to be blown up, no. This team will be contending come June, come July, come August. They will be in the thick of things.
And I think it's important to point out that we were wrong on the date. It's May 19th, actually. We're not predicting the future and predicting the meltdown.
You know what?
That
makes the point even stronger, and that the offense has been struggling even more than that.
Yeah, and I think the number one thing you look at is this team is a game over 500. They're 5 games out of the division, the best division in baseball. They're 4 games out of the wild card. And they have not hit. In fact, this team has hit worse than any team I can recall over a 2-month span over the last 10 years, last 5 or 10 years. This team is that bad offensively.
Oh, without question.
And yet you were over 500, yet you were in the thick of things. That right there should tell you that even if the offense doesn't do what it did last year, the beginning of last season, that it still is going to get better. But I will admit, I've been a big defender of this offense. And I defended and said it would come around, that Paul Canerico, Joe Creedy, Jermaine Dye would come around. And you got to remember the loss of Jim Thome, who was playing very good this season, is a major loss. And he's going to be back next week. And that's going to have an impact. And that's going to improve this offense because it will take pressure off Ty and Dye and Canerico.
Yeah, it seems
like
a big
mental
thing
this team
right now.
This team lacks athletes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a little bit comfortable. Because if there's one thing the Sox offense doesn't have, it's any athletes. There is shit for athletic talent on the field. Just pure athletes that just can play the game and do it well. They don't have that. Canerico is not what I consider an athlete in the sense that he's not going to run a bunch of things. He's not going to be able to do a lot of different things.
Nobody in that infield is.
He's not a Torrey Hunter out
nobody
on the field.
In that
he's a great athlete and can do a lot of things.
The only guy is...
Grady Sizemore.
The only guys you could look at is maybe Erstad and even a Dye, but you know what? They're up there in age. So if you have maybe a guy who's athletic, he's up there in age. Yeah, this offensive team, not too athletic.
But here's the key question. Do you think the Sox need to make a move? Is Greg Walker, is he the odd man out right now, or should they make a move? I mean, is Tadahito Iguchi a guy that we should possibly think of moving? What about Joe Creedy? You know, is there who should they move if a shakeup is in fact necessary to get this offense on track?
I think it's all Walker, and I'm not saying it's Walker's fault because I think in a lot of instances, hitting coaches for the most part, I believe that they have similar theories, but it's just the way they communicate it. And when a team like this is struggling, you fire a hitting coach, it's obviously saying that the hitting coach is to blame. The players are going to look at themselves in the mirror when that new hitting coach comes in. All of a sudden, they start hitting. That's typically how it happens. Usually, a new hitting coach comes in and the players start hitting, and it's not because of the hitting coach. It's just because the players are saying, well, if they bring in a new hitting coach and we still don't hit, now it's really on us. So they kind of take it up to the level. They look themselves in the mirror and they try to figure out what's wrong. So I think that might be the problem. The approach of this team has been kind of a little frustrating to me, and I really wasn't fond of this team offensively going into the year. I think from a statistical standpoint, I thought they were going to score a lot of runs. I thought they were going to produce, but I wasn't really too excited with this offense going into the season, and that's really why I don't think I really had the Sox going and actually making or winning the World Series. Just because of this offense, I'm not that happy with it from just a consistent production standpoint. I think they could bash. I think they could score a lot of runs, but I still have some doubts with them. But if you're looking for a change, I think it does have to be Walker. I think you do have to fire him, not because it's necessarily his fault, but just to kind of get a new guy in there, maybe get this offense jump-started. And that might be the big thing, because Jim Thome, I don't necessarily know how important he is for the team from an actual production standpoint. I think it's more of a presence, because it seems like right now they're waiting for him to come back. They think, you know what, he comes back, he's going to make this team better because he's a little bit more patient and he takes pressure off everyone else. And I think that his presence in a lineup could maybe ease the nerves of a Canerico and a Dye, and maybe they could produce a little bit more. So I think that's where Thome comes in a little bit, is just kind of maybe from a presence standpoint.
Do they need to make a move? Because I know my trade, feeling
no,
is this
no,
team...
No, I don't think there's any move that they can make from an offensive standpoint to improve the team. Because you know what? If you go and you add a good offensive player, you still have six guys around him who's not hitting. They aren't hitting. You know, if it was just one or two guys, that's fine. But that middle of the lineup is batting 200 apiece. So you're not going to make and make a trade for three, four guys.
Here's the thing. When do one or two changes make a difference to wake everyone else up? I know Minnesota last year had a pretty horrendous start of the season, and they ended up winning the division. They made some serious moves. They took Tony Bautista. They cut his ass, you know. They made some moves with some starters.
But
they got rid of two starters. I think it was middle of May, early June, and things took off. Obviously,
starters
Johan
right
Santana
now,
and Liriano had a big thing to do with it, but couldn't the Sox consider? I mean, for me, I've identified one player that I want gone, and that's Tadahito Iguchi. I don't want him around.
What?
I do not like his swing. I've never been a big fan of his swing, but he's always produced, and I've liked his approach at the plate consistently. But he's really slowing down defensively. He's actually a poor defensive second baseman this season. He's been one of the worst second basemen in baseball. And you have a guy like Mark Grusolonic out for the Kansas City Royals, who does a very good job. Kind of does what Iguchi did when he was at his best. And then, on the other hand, there's another move that I think has to be made. I think the White Sox have to trade for a starting outfielder, and a good one. They have to make that move. At one point, I thought Jock Jones could have been that guy, but Jock Jones is really producing. The Cubs have decided, hey, we're not going to get rid of that guy. The Cubs were stupid enough, and they were pretty much open to get rid of him for whatever it was in the offseason. But there are a lot of offensive calibers or outfielders of that caliber of Jack Jones' nature available. And I'm not saying he's going to make a change, but making the statement of getting another bat and maybe replacing a guy like Tadahito Iguchi, a consistent starter, makes a difference. That could fire up and get everything else flowing.
From an Iguchi standpoint, are you looking at it more from – you obviously have never liked his swing, but his numbers, while bad, it's not like they're worse than anyone else on his team. So offensively, I think – I'm not really concerned about him. I think he'll somehow come around. Defensively, I agree with you. I think he has digressed a little bit, and I think his defensive he's kind of gotten worse, a little bit worse this year. That kind of puts a sign that, you know, next year he shouldn't really be in the thick of things next year as a second baseman. But offensively, I think right now, I think he's going to come around. So I don't know about necessarily getting rid of him from a purely offensive standpoint.
Well, see, my reaction is the fact that I think his swing speed is just too slow. I don't think he has enough swing speed to hit major league fastballs. I don't. And when you can't hit a major league fastball, you're going to have trouble, because pitchers are going to figure out, and they really have. And they've just buried him with fastballs, steady dose. And then he can't hit a breaking ball to save his life.
Well, that's where he has to go back to hitting it to the opposite field and hitting it to the gap. And I know he's done that a couple times, but he hasn't done that consistently enough.
And then when it comes to the outfield, I think it's just a flat-out no-brainer. There is an outfield spot open, and there is not an in-house solution.
See, the thing
Ryan
is,
Sweeney...
I like.
Whoa, let me finish on this one.
Yeah.
Ryan Sweeney has looked very good, but he is not ready for major league success. I thought he was. I made a lot of bold predictions that he would come up and he would never go back down. But he could use some more time in the minor leagues, and that's not going to hurt him. I think he's shown why he's a really good talent. But I also have to say, we bring this guy up. Number one, Jermaine Dye is probably gone at the end of the season. So whoever you trade for is going to be utilized next season.
Yes.
Number two, you have Darren Erstad and Scott Pesednik. And you cannot count on either of them to be consistently healthy out on the field. So there's still an opening there. And number three, we do not have an everyday left fielder. I don't care what anyone thinks of Scott Pesednik. I will be concerned with Scott Pesednik when he comes back. And I will let whoever is in the field compete for the job at that point. Because if you get an outfielder, and a good one at that, a good, young, talented outfielder, he is going to play, and he's going to play a lot. Not only this year, but he's going to have a future with this club for the next 3, 4, 5 years. And that is a trade that not only helps you now, but it helps you later. Especially when you know that even after making that trade and getting this young outfielder, yeah, he's going to replace Dye, but you still have a roster spot open because Pasetic will not be around next year.
Oh.
Erstedt probably will not be around next year. So you have another spot to still bring up Ryan Sweeney for next year as an everyday player if you want it, and then go out and get the big bat that I want him to get in the offseason, which is Torii Hunter.
Oh, okay. As soon as you said that last part, I got off track now. I do agree. I think you could get any type of offensive outfielder right now, and I think it'll be fine because either Jermaine Dye, actually all three of the outfielders that they have right now will probably, or at least planned outfielders in Pasetic, Erstedt, and Dye, they probably won't be here next year. And if Erstedt is here, he's probably going to be here in more of an in and out basis, as in a utility role. So I do agree with you. I know you brought up the name Jock Jones. While I've always liked Jock Jones and I like his attitude and I like his kind of cockiness out there, I'm not necessarily sure he's the answer at all. I think if you're going to go out there and get an outfielder, I think you have to get someone who you know is going to go out there and produce. And in Jock Jones' case, he could very well come in and struggle for a few weeks, and that's not going to solve anything. So I think if you're going to make a trade for an outfielder, I think it has to be a big one. I think it's got to be for a guy who's going to be here for a long, long time. Torii Hunter, I've never been a fan of him, never will be a fan of him. I think actually picking him up would just be a disaster because he's probably going to be getting big bucks, and I just don't think he's worth it. I think defensively he's great. He's probably the best center fielder in baseball. There's no question about it. But offensively, I've never been impressed with him. I never will be impressed with him because I just don't think his approach is that good. And I think from a Minnesota Twins standpoint, I think a lot of Minnesota Twins fans even have some problems with him offensively. He's kind of on and off.
They may have had problems with him offensively last year, but Torii Hunter's made some major adjustments to his offensive game, and he's becoming a more complete player. And I'm not looking at Torii Hunter.
But he's always had the ability to do that, though, and he's never done it. He's doing it now, yeah, but you know what? He's also a free agent at the end of the year, so who knows what's motivating him right now. The fact is that
I'm talking about in general, I'm just throwing out names, Torii Hunter.
How much is he
going to
land?
I'm talking about getting some freaking athletes in the field.
True. But how much is Torii Hunter going to land in a contract?
He's going to get big bucks. But let me tell you, Jermaine Dye is going to be gone. You may lose Mark Burley. There's going to be spots opening up. And another guy that I think could and probably should get traded this year is Joe Creedy. Because, again, I don't think, whatever it is, he does not look right at the plate. And it's not just him being in a funk. It's just he doesn't look right. He doesn't look like he has the swing speed he once had. And I think you can still get something for him. And I think the Sox and Ken Williams need to consider retooling the offense now. Maybe bring in a Greg Walker. Maybe you try that first before you make the moves. Because I agree, even though I'm a fan of Greg Walker, I think he's a good hitting coach, and I don't think he's at fault. I also think after five seasons of doing this, or however long he's been there, you know, guys get tired of hearing the same thing.
Exactly.
And sometimes you just need a new approach. You just need to hear a new thing.
I kind of agree with you on the Creedy point. I want to get back to the Torii Hunter. The fact is if he gets, let's say, a $15 million a year contract, which is very possible, I think he's making about 8 to 10 now, he's probably going to get about 5-6 years. He's broken down a little bit over the past couple of years where he's been hurt for 3-4 weeks in the season, 2-3 weeks here and there. I think if you give him a 5-6 year deal, which is probably what he might command, maybe even a 4 or 5 year deal, I think he's only going to be productive for you, and even productive, I don't even think he's that good, for only a couple of years. So that's just a deal where long term, you're going to regret it big time. As far as Creedy goes, see, that's a really tough situation because if you put him on the market, let's say a month from now, he's still batting what he is. What is he batting right now? Maybe 210?
Yeah.
Okay, if you put him on the market, let's say a month from now, batting 210, how much do you think you could get for him?
I think it's I think now you still have a shot that teams are going to pay a decent amount. I know the Angels are seriously looking, and they would obviously have an extreme amount of interest in Creedy. And the time probably to deal Creedy was this offseason. And at the same time, I think I understand why the Sox didn't do it, because at the point, you know, Creedy was very good. He was one of the best all-around third basemen in baseball last year. There's no doubt about it.
And you know what?
And he was still young enough. Everyone knew he had the ability to put up those numbers. And he still has the ability to do so. But when you know he's the pending free agency is looming, and this is probably the year, either now or this offseason when you trade him, because the following year is going to be his last year before he's an unrestricted free agent. So, you know, you got to kind of get something for Joe Creedy, especially when you have Josh Fields waiting there at third base.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying Fields is ready right now, but what I'm saying is the Sox got to figure out a way to shake things up. I think that is necessary at this point. And I'm not saying it's the only way the offense will take off, because very well this offense, you can make no changes and it would still be very well, very good the rest of the season. I'm not doubting that. And that's assuming you can just live with the fact that you don't have a really elite off hitter. because you know the middle of the bats are going to, I think they'll come around and be pretty decent. But I still would like to see a change of pace, and I would like to see a lot more athletes brought in because I think they can consistently do a lot of little things that help, you know, win ball games.
Yeah. Especially considering how Anazagin wants to kind of manage a game ideally. Going back to Creedy, looking back and not just looking at how he's done this year, it might have been a wise move for them to trade him this past offseason because his value was at his highest. And you could maybe say that he had a bright future ahead of him. He still had the back problems, and there was still, you know, he had struggles the prior year, so you could have had a realistic viewpoint and say, you know what, maybe he's going to regress, and he has, obviously. So maybe trading him this past offseason would have made sense, although from a PR move, it would have looked like a disaster, especially after trading Garcia and trading McCarthy. It would have looked like, oh, the Sox, they don't want to pay him money. They're trying to cut back. They're going to trade Creedy because they're going to go back on the cheap. So I think from a PR standpoint, that would have been a bad move, but from a long-term standpoint, it might have been good because they probably could have got a lot for him. Now,
and that's
who knows how to third base.
I think now is the time to trade Creedy because at this point,
you don't
they
think
really
he's
have
gonna,
the reason the front office.
You don't think he's going to do much.
Realistically, trade him and not piss off the fan base.
Where's Creedy's career headed? 2008 and beyond. Where do you think his career is actually at?
It's in a White Sox uniform.
No,
I know
no.
That much.
From a production standpoint, do you think he's a middle? Kind of, you know, a middle, you know, third baseman, kind of, you know, not great, but, you know, not horrible, or is he one of the top ones?
He will not be one of the top ones, but he will be one of the better all-around third basemen. There's no doubt about that, but he is never going to be a middle-of-the-order threat.
Okay.
He will always be a role player. If you put him in the sixth spot of the lineup, you are right, but do not count on him being more than that. Maybe a five-hole hitter at his best, maybe, but he will never be in that three or four spot, and the money he could get and the money Scott Boras is going to get him is going to pay him as if he's a three or four spot hitter.
Yes.
Which is why I think you have to take advantage of the fact that you could move him and get something for him. Because look what Aubrey Huff could have commanded a couple times, even when he wasn't playing very well.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay ended up taking a lot less for him. But let's be honest here. Aubrey Huff had some better offensive seasons than Joe Creedy. But at different points in time, he would struggle offensively. And he was not the defensive player that Joe Creedy was.
Mm-hmm.
Yet teams were always calling the Devil Rays, willing to offer a lot for that bat. Because third base, for the most part, has been a tough position to find that bat. Especially a guy that can also, you know, pick it like Creedy over there.
Yeah. You know what? I'll agree with you. I mean, obviously, you have to see how this season unfolds. And if the Sox are still in it, you kind of got to think that they're not going to do it, for the simple fact is they already have a couple holes in the outfield. They can't afford to lose their third baseman. God knows what they're going to do there. You can't go with an Ozuna or a Mikoviak or even a Josh Fields at this point. So I think that's a tough situation. If the Sox do fall out of it, I'm sure Creedy has to be one of the first ones to go without question. So I will agree with you on the Creedy point. As far as everyone else, Aguchi, I'd like to kind of keep around, see, but once again, if this team falls out, I think he's another guy you have to dump right now. Yeah, go ahead.
What do you think of the idea of Pablo Ozuna getting more at bats to second base? Because I think Pablo Ozuna does a lot more to help this team, and he's not a liability defensively at second base at all because he has a lot more range than Aguchi has, and he does. He's at least one of the few guys that can actually. Him and Erstad are the only guys that can do the little things on the base pass. That really Ozzie Guillen likes.
You know what?
And I'm sorry, whatever problems people have against Ozzie Guillen, if he's going to be your manager, and this has been the biggest failure, I think, in terms of Ken Williams' offseason, and I've liked what Ken Williams has done for the most part, is you have to have guys around him that are going to do what Ozzie likes. Because Ozzie needs to have that. He needs to have those sparky type of players. And Pablo Ozuna is that type of guy. And if you play him at second base, he's not a liability like he is out in left field. And with Aguchi struggling, I think Pablo Ozuna is a viable option, and he's maybe a better option.
Two months from now, maybe come June, July, assuming Canerico and Dye and Przinski and maybe even Creedy play up to their capabilities offensively. At that point, I could see, you know what, yeah, because if Gucci continues to do what he's doing, which is a possibility, throwing Ozuna at second makes sense. But I think at this point, if you were to look at all the guys offensively, I think Gucci is the least of the Sox problem right now, right? From the lineup standpoint, isn't he the least of their problems? Who do you think right now in the Sox offense right now are the three biggest holes in the Sox lineup right now, producing right now?
Ron Mikowiak.
I'm talking about regular starters.
Right. Well, he's been a regular. Well, I'll put it this way. Whoever plays left field.
Okay.
I would probably rank somewhere up there as Tadahito Aguchi. Definitely, though, the main pressure falls on the big boys, the big bats in the middle, because when the offense is not struggling, you're going to look at the guys that are going to pay the big money, and that's Paul Konerko and Jermaine Dye. And hopefully, and I want to point out that today, Paul Konerko, Jermaine Dye, and Joe Creedy were combined 4 for 11, so maybe it's a sign of things to come, and Jermaine Dye had some big games against the Yankees, and A.J. Yeah. Pierzynski has looked to be waking up a bit as well, so maybe guys are coming around here. And Konerko had a big go-ahead home run in the 8th inning, I think, of today's game for the Sox. It didn't last long. The lead was blown in the bottom of the 8th, and they gave up 6 runs. But maybe those guys come around. And obviously, if you're going to put the blame on anyone in this offense, you got to do it on the boys that are they're getting paid the bucks. And the big three of the Sox lineup is Joe Creedy, Jermaine Dye, and Paul
Konerko. And really, you could even just narrow it down to Konerko and Dye, because you know, at least Creedy's playing a third base position. He's playing a very tough position, and he's handling himself well. Whereas Konerko and Dye, they're first base and right field. They're making you know $10 million or whatever. Actually, in Dye's case, I'm not sure how much he's making this year.
$6.5 million.
Yeah, okay, well, he's not making huge money, but these are the guys who are supposed to be producing, and they haven't, and really that's where a lot of it falls. So as far as Taguchi lays in there, when you're talking about left field, Paul Konerko, Jermaine Dye, and Tadi Taguchi, I think he's third on that list. So putting Ozuna, while he may kind of make sense because you bring in a guy like Ozuna who has a lot of energy, I'm not necessarily sure it's justified considering how poorly everyone else is doing.
But see, my result is when you're playing poorly, I take the Mike Socha approach. And if you look at what a guy like Mike Socha does, he runs more guys. He does everything. He puts guys in motion all the time. He does that.
Yeah.
And with Tadahito Iguchi, yes, Tadahito Iguchi can do hit and runs when he's doing decent. But right now, Tadahito Iguchi is a bad candidate for hit and runs because he strikes out a lot. As opposed to a guy like Ozuna, who, let's be honest, he can bunt. He can basically put the ball to either the opposite field or pull it if he needs to, so he can place the ball where he wants it, and he can run on the base pass.
So who plays
so
left
can do
field
all those
then?
Little things.
I mean, assuming nobody
who plays left field. It's not like Pablo Ozuna is our everyday left fielder. I've said all along there is no other option. The Sox and Ken Williams must make a trade for an outfield. There is no in-house option unless Sweeney comes along, because Brian Anderson is playing great right now down in AAA. He's been working on his adjustments. He's went down there. He's had a great attitude from everything I've heard. And the one time I talked to someone down in AAA that's familiar with things, he's really been there working his butt off and doing the good things. Ozzie Guillen has said the right things about Anderson's situation and how, yeah, we want him to get figured out down there and come back up. And while, yes, he's producing, it's not time to bring him up right now. So I don't consider that an option. I think Anderson should be up. I actually am going to change my stance on him. I think he will be back up with the Sox this season. But right now, they have to make a move because Rob Mikoyak, who I like as a role player, is just brutal right now. And he's not an everyday player regardless of the fact.
Mikoyak, when he gets hot, he could be very productive. But the thing is, he hasn't been. Because when he gets going offensively, he's an exciting player to watch. The way he swings, he kind of puts everything into every single swing. And when he's going on, you could throw him in left field and he could produce. But you just don't know when it's going to happen. And really, the Sox don't really have the time to wait for that. So, okay, the Sox make a trade. Who do they make a trade for? Who do they give up?
I don't care if you go for Carl Crawford and give up a boatload of prospects. Let me be honest. The Sox have a lot of things they can give up. And I'm not saying Crawford's the guy they go for, but that's a guy I like.
That would make sense. Now, that would make sense because he's a guy who long-term fits in. He's going to produce now. He's going to produce next year, and he's going to produce for a long time. And you really – he could play any outfield spot while he's obviously ideally a left fielder. He could, you know, at the drop of a dime, go to somewhere else and handle it, you know, rather decently. You know, so plus he's a left-handed bat, which the Sox historically haven't had many of. He could obviously run, which the Sox don't have much of today. So yeah, if you go out there and go after Crawford and throw a lot at him, I wouldn't mind that. Especially if it's minor leaguers, I wouldn't mind throwing a lot of guys at him.
And again, I have no problem with another Tampa Bay outfielder in Rocco Baldelli, who again has speed. I think there's a bit more risk in there. And I think if you're going to give up good prospects, why not go the full-blown for Crawford if
exactly.
you can get him?
Yeah.
And but both of these guys are signed a very affordable contract for the next few years. So they are good long-term answers. You know, they're good. Not only are they going to help now, they're going to help later. The only question is, you know, obviously the Devil Rays are going to want pitching, more pitching. And John Danks is not off the – you know, you cannot trade John Danks.
No, you can't. I mean, obviously anybody is tradable. Anybody all around baseball is tradable. But in the John Danks case, assuming the Devil Rays want to go out there and acquire John Danks in a trade for Crawford, you're assuming you're going to give up other prospects for him. It's not necessarily worth it. Because I look at John Danks, and I truly, honestly see a guy who could be a successful pitcher for a while. I truly do believe that. And I even think more so with him, more so than I did with McCarthy. I just think he seems like he's on the mound, and he seems like he has that just demeanor and that makeup to be a very effective pitcher for a while. And I'm actually impressed at how well he's pitched so far, because I thought he was going to struggle in the beginning, because that's typically how his minor league career has gone. He struggled, he makes adjustments, but it seems like he's been pitching well right off the bat. So he, at this point, is pretty untradeable, if you could label anyone that.
I think another option is, this is something we've discussed a lot over the last, this year and last year's show, and that's a lot of sense making, it makes a lot of sense to get a guy like Sean Figgins in some type of package with the Angels, whether that's the Sox trading prospects, or if the Angels are, you know, getting Joe Creedy. And I'm not saying you make a Creedy for Figgins straight up deal, but the Angels have a lot of middle infield prospects, guys like Eric Ibar, who aren't exactly their top prospects. They could look real good at second base, especially considering whether you think Oguchi is going to come around or not this year. Oguchi is a free agent at the end of the season. And let's be honest, the Sox strengths in the minor leagues are not usually position players, especially not middle infield position players, because Robert Valido is again struggling. And Christopher Getz is coming around. He's doing pretty good down in Double A for the Barons. But again, if you're talking about being a winning ball club, I'm not saying he's ready to come up next year. So a guy like Eric Ibar and a guy like Sean Figgins, that gives Ozzie Guillen two different guys that can run, that can move. Figgins can play multiple positions, and if you stick him at one position, he's going to be pretty good out there, and he's a very capable hitter, and he's a young player.
Right.
So I think there's some sense there.
Right now, when you look at the Sox acquiring anyone, maybe you could kind of put first base off, because you have to assume Canerco is going to be here for the duration of his contract. He seems like he might be the face of the franchise. Everywhere else, though, if the Sox look at any other team's farm system, if it's a second baseman, a shortstop, a third baseman, an outfielder, they can't look past anyone, because every single one of those positions could very well be available next year. I love Juan Uribe, but I don't think that he has a long-term future with the White Sox. I just don't see it happening. I think at some point he's going to be gone. So I think the Sox could look at any trade, and they could add a second baseman, shortstop, third baseman, outfielder, whatever, and be fine with it, because they don't have much depth in any position right now. But as far as Figgins goes, while I like Figgins, I'm not necessarily sure he adds much to this team right now. He's obviously very quick, and he has a lot of excitement, but is he a significant upgrade over what the Sox could throw out in left field right now?
Yes. Everyone is a significant
upgrade?
You got to understand, they don't have a major league left fielder. They don't have one. So everything that is quality and capable, and Figgins is a career 280 hitter, 280 plus hitter, who can steal a lot of bases. And I'm not
is
saying
he struggling this year?
Sean Figgins.
How's he doing so far? I know you're struggling in the
he
early
just
zone.
Came back. He was hurt, you know, so it's kind of a wait-and-see approach. And I'm not saying you stick Figgins at the top of the order. I think ideally Figgins fits more down in the lower part of the
ninth,
order.
He's a ninth hitter.
Yeah, I think you put him in the 8 or 9 spot, and then after the first, you know, go through the lineup, he's kind of like a second leadoff hitter, so to speak.
I think
when you hit 9-1-2.
The situation of the Sox right now is that their outfield as a whole is a mess, because, like you said, Jermaine Dye is gone, Erstad probably going to be gone, Pitsenik is gone. So if you're going to go out there and acquire an outfielder, instead of getting a guy like Figgins, who's more or less just kind of like someone you're throwing in who's an upgrade, go after the big thing. So I think you go after Carl Crawford or just forget about it. I mean, you either go after the big guy or forget about it.
Keep talking about big guy, and if we're going to talk about big guy, then we have to put the name on one guy, and that's Ken Griffey Jr. He's moved to right field. He is going to be available.
I'm talking about long-term, though, too. I'm talking about long-term. I'm talking about how long does Ken Griffey have, really, in Major League Baseball?
He's got a couple seasons left, and I'm not saying he's the ultimate choice, but you can't just focus on one guy, Carl Crawford, because let's be honest. This team needs to make upgrades. And just getting one outfielder, this team could go and get two outfielders for all.
You're right.
A big-name move, and let's say Figgins is available or some other guy's available in a minor deal where the Sox give up a Charlie Hager for a Sean Figgins. And I'm not saying this. I'm just hypothetically throwing out things and picture whatever guy. They could legitimately have sense, and it would make sense to acquire two outfielders, a Carl Crawford type or a more upper echelon outfielder, and then a guy like Figgins who can be a good role-playing outfielder.
I would agree with that.
You know that Erstad could then move into a utility role, or Figgins could be that utility guy. It's going to be interesting.
I like Hager, though, so I don't want to trade
him. Wow.
Wow. I do like Charles. You know, I've always been fascinated with people who throw knuckleballs, and considering how young he is and how young he developed the knuckleball, I kind of just fascinated with that whole thing. So I kind of like to see what happens with his future in Major League Baseball.
Charlie Hager is not a good Major League pitcher. There, it's been said.
He's not a Major League pitcher. Okay, he's a knuckleballer who's still rather young, so he has a lot of time, I think, to develop. You wouldn't think so?
He has absolutely no place. I'm just saying he has absolutely no place in the Chicago White Sox. Yes, he could pitch for other Major League teams. Yes, he could pitch for teams like the Kansas City Royals. Yes, he could pitch for teams like the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. But no, he does not.
I'm not talking about next year.
I'm just saying he doesn't. He's not near as good as some of the other prospects the Sox have that are pitchers in the system. Not only do they have a shitload of pitchers in their Major League rotation that are good, most of which are actually signed, because Ken Williams has done a good job of that. You know, John Garland's still going to be here for another year or two. You know, you have Contreras is going to be here for another year, even though I don't want him to be here for another year or two. You have Vasquez, who just signed his new deal. You have John Danks, who looks like he's going to be here for a long time. You got Gio Gonzalez down there. You got Lance Broadway, who's, you know, coming back from injury. You got Gavin Floyd, who, regardless of what other people think, you know, let's just be honest, Ken Williams likes the guy a lot. And you got Russell. You got Egbert. I mean, this is a team that has a lot of, you know, decent Major League pitching prospects. I'm not saying they have a superstar pitching prospect. John Danks is as close to that as it gets for the Sox, and even then, he's not like the number one pitching prospect in all baseball or anything like that. But Charlie Hager does not rank up there. I'm sorry.
Here's the kind of thing. When it comes to Charlie Hager and the fact that he's a knuckleballer, I think it takes a lot of time for a knuckleballer to actually master the pitch. And I'm not saying next year, maybe even not the year after, but I think somewhere along the line, he could potentially master that pitch and take many, many steps up and jump ahead of a lot of guys in as far as producing at the Major League level. I'm not saying, I don't know when it would happen, and I'm not saying that you keep Charlie Hager down to AAA for the next 3 years, but I wouldn't mind seeing him up here, you know, even in a bullpen role over the next year or two. That's all.
I understand.
Because I think...
I heard you.
You know what? I think when you have a knuckleball like that, and there's not many out there, I think there's always a possibility with him. And from what I hear, and from... I mean, obviously, I've seen a pitch, but from what I hear, he throws, for his age, he throws it very, very well. And it's just a matter of time, just maybe with extra work, and the more he throws it, he could potentially master it and become maybe even the second Tim Wakefield or something like that. And that's a guy who you could potentially have in your pitching staff for many, many years. So, you know, I wouldn't mind to see him in the bullpen at some point and then eventually kind of, however, 3-4 years down the line, whatever it may be. Let's not get into Charles Hager.
Yeah, speaking of bullpen, I think we're going to take a quick break, come back and discuss the Sox bullpen.
Yes.
And throw around, you know, we talked a bit about the offense, and I think we've both decided, and even though we've had a lot of arguments this segment, we've kind of had a jumbled segment, we've been all over the place, mm-hmm. and it's been a couple of weeks, so there's a lot of stuff to discuss, but I think we've agreed on one thing. The Sox could at least, and pretty much need to acquire one outfielder, and they could definitely acquire more than one if they really needed to.
Yeah.
Or if Ken Williams found capable guys out there that aren't going to cost an arm and a leg. Now let's see if maybe they need to make moves to the bullpen. We're going to discuss that in the next segment.
Outside Report, Mario Scalise, Jason Gage, and had a fairly lengthy first segment, 38 minutes, talking all offense. I tried to get into the whole Charles Hager thing, which I probably shouldn't have because it's Charles freaking Hager. He's the least of the Sox concern. He shouldn't be on anyone's minds right now because the Sox have bigger fish to fry. But one thing is this pitching staff, which is kind of half and half. You have the positive, the really positive, which has been the rotation of Garland and Vasquez and Contreras and Danks and Burley. But let's start with the bullpen. Pitching staff, the rotation's fine. Let's get into this bullpen. It started off well. Guys like McDougal, guys like, maybe not necessarily Thorne, but Andrew Sisco started off somewhat positive. You know, obviously, you know, Bobby Jenks, Nick Massette started off somewhat positive. I was kind of impressed with the early going. But it's kind of gone backwards over these past 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, I mean, let's do a quick recap. Arzma, 3.6.
I forgot about Arzma.
McDougal, 5.4. Jenks 3.18, Massett 6.61, Logan 4.63, Cisco 6.75, Thornton 4.66. Those are the ERAs after the Sox, the two debacles against the Cubs.
Yes.
So that's two relievers with ERAs in the three. That is not a good thing because relievers should, in general, have lower ERAs because most of the runs they give up are technically the runs of the starting pitchers in general.
Yeah, when you're a reliever with an ERA over four, if you have an ERA in the four range as a reliever, you better be at the back of the bullpen. You can't be a number two or three guy out of the pen. And right now, the Sox have their number one guy in Jenks, the number two guy in Arzma, and then after that, the number three guy right now apparently is Mike McDougal, who has an ERA over five and has been getting lit up over the past few appearances.
Yeah, and I think the only bright spots out of the bullpen anytime recently has been Bobby Jenks and Matt Thornton, because Thornton has came around after a real slow start, and he's been pitching a lot better.
Well, he was kind of MIA for the first few weeks of the season. Not sure if there was an injury there or what, but he was rarely used. Andrew Cisco was used more and more, which didn't really make much sense.
And when it comes to Cisco, he's kind of been as expected, so to speak. When he's throwing strikes and he's got this new drop-down delivery, he's throwing some nasty pitches, and he's made guys look foolish. But at the same time, and it's just a general concern with the bullpen, I think we both discussed it. We both knew it was going to come. They're going to have trouble throwing strikes, and it's really been biting them in the ass lately. They have really been putting on way too many base runners with free passes, and it's unacceptable. I don't care who you are. I don't care what you do. No major league pitcher should be giving up this many free passes. No bullpen should, because you're not going to overcome it.
It's a hit or miss bullpen. It really is a hit or miss bullpen. This bullpen in this next week could be lights out. This really upcoming week, they could be lights out. They have the potential to go out there and throw 10 innings over this next week and be lights out. And then the next week, blow up again. And that's kind of the scary thing. And you have Bobby Jenks, who has been a positive. David Arzma, who I think has been working a little too much. I think that's why kind of he hasn't really been pitching lately. He's kind of been pulled back a little bit. But outside of those two guys, a lot of question marks. Mike McDougal, I think I just kind of questioned him from the beginning because I think he's always an injury waiting to happen, and I'm sure it's going to happen at some point this year. Matt Thornton has come around nicely. Andrew Cisco, as you said, he's effective. He's talented and he has his stuff, but he could be a little bit wild. Nick Bissett, he started off pretty well, and then he's kind of just gone into the bad ways over the past few weeks. So there's definitely some concern with this bullpen. Is this a situation, though, where they just kind of got to suck it up and just deal with it? Because they don't have many options outside of the guys that they have up here.
Yeah, there's definitely not
any options. I'm sorry, that aren't any different than the minor leaguers that they have, I should say.
Yeah, and I think the main concern I have is really when it comes to the bullpen, my concern is for the main guys. I think as long as you have a big three in the bullpen, you're going to be in good shape. If you have more than that, you're going to have a great bullpen. And I know that I've consistently said it, and I think you pretty much agree with me. When you look at the last 5 years of baseball, the bullpen has become quickly and quietly, I guess, secretly, has become one of the key portions of playoff contenders, because the teams with the best bullpens typically are in the playoffs and typically have playoff success. And it's kind of no longer the starting pitching that's king, with the washdown fifth starters and the area of the starting pitchers going less and less. It really came down to good bullpens equate to good teams equate to making the playoffs. And the Sox bullpen has the ability to be good. I don't think there's any doubt to it. It's a question of when will it get there, and will it get there this season? Because there's a lot of inexperienced guys that are going to be in situations they haven't been in before, and they're going to fail in those situations occasionally. Arzma's had some trouble in late inning games. You have Cisco coming in occasionally not being able to throw strikes. You have Nick Massett. This is really his first time ever up in the majors, you know? You have a lot of legitimate concerns, and the big three has not really done it. McDougal started off so great, and I kind of have concerns that maybe he's hurt or something, because usually when McDougal's pitching and he's healthy, he's nasty.
Yeah.
There's no reason for him to be getting hit like he has been, unless he's tendered or he just lost a release point. But I'm more concerned that I think maybe he's hurt or something. And Thornton, he's coming around, so if he can get back, that's huge, because if you have that righty-lefty and then Jenks, at least you have enough where if you go to take the game 7 innings, and our starters do that very well, you can go 8-9 and kind of do that.
That right there, I think, is a positive, is because the Sox rotation 1-5 has the capability, and they've done it. I'm not sure what the numbers are, but what is it, over the last 20 starts, maybe 19 of those or 18 of those, they've gone at least 6 innings. So I think this White Sox rotation, more so than most major league rotations. They have the ability of going 6, 7, 8 innings. So that alone is going to mean that the Sox don't need 4 or 5 guys down there. They could even handle 2 good relievers down there. While they're going to the other guys might blow some games, the fact that their starters are going deep and assuming that the offense gets going, they're going to be able to win some games. But you still would like to have some depth down there, some. Because right now, there's a possibility where you could have 1, 2 guys and the rest of the guys, you don't know what's going to happen, especially when it comes to walks. If this bullpen comes in, if a guy like Nick Massett or Andrew Sisco comes in and they're throwing strikes and they're getting hit, that's fine because the Sox have a defense behind and release some defensive players and plays can be made. But when you're walking guys, that's going to kill this team. That could kill this team in the long run this season.
And again, I look at you and I ask you, should there be some changes made to this bullpen? Or should the Sox stick through it? Because I'm of the feeling that we have a lot of talented guys here, and you really got to let them develop. Because the reality is, these guys, most of them are not experienced enough, and you kind of got to go with some and deal with the growing pains and hope that as the season goes on, that number one, the offense can come around and carry this, and that the pitching can stay strong, and both of those can kind of counterattack what could be a struggling bullpen from time to time, in the hopes that the bullpen will go through its ups and downs, its struggles, and click come August and September and take over in October.
You know what? It was bond. You know what? If this bullpen, which is a pretty young bullpen, when you look at guys, and maybe not young in terms of age, I'm not sure necessarily age, but when you look at guys like Arzuma and Sisco and Massett and even Thornton, you know, they're still a rather young bullpen. It's not like they have a tremendous amount of years of experience under them. So if they would have went out there and they would have pitched great in April and pitched great in May and pitched great in June and pitched great in July, I could very well see some concerns heading in August, September, because you know what? You don't know how they're going to handle that pressure. So them struggling right now, if they're strong mentally and if Cooper can work with them, which you know he has the capabilities of doing, yeah, this might be the best thing to happen to this bullpen, them struggling right now. Because now, if they figure it out, they could always look back and realize that they went to those growing pains and maybe it's going to make them strong in the long run. So I think that is something that you could that's one upside or potential upside to the team.
Do you think there's any key to this bullpen? Is there any key guy that has to get going, or is it just a matter of a key of throwing strikes? And that's easier said than done, obviously, because these guys have a history of not throwing strikes.
Well, obviously Jenks has to do whatever he's going to do, because I think if Jenks goes down or if he falls off, I'm not necessarily sure if any one of those guys behind there could step into the closer's role, which apparently is what the Sox want to use. I don't know if there's anyone who could really, you know, take over Jenks' job. Although I hate saying that as his job. But if I would have to say one guy, I think it would have to be Matt Thornton. And obviously assuming that David Arzuma is good to go for the long run, which is a question mark. But assuming Arzuma is, I think the big thing is Matt Thornton. Because if he could get going, you have your solid lefty, you have your solid righty, and you have your closer. And I think as long as you have the three guys with the Sox rotation, I think they'll be fine. After that, I'm not necessarily sure if there's a key guy. McDougal, even if McDougal had a 1 ERA right now, I still don't like it, because I think come August he could fall on the injury and then the Sox could be really be screwed. So I don't care much about him at all. Key might be Thornton.
I think you have a valid point, because while I think McDougal is one of their very best arms in the pen, you are right that if you come on and you come to count on him, the reality is there's a pretty good chance he's going to be hurt when you really need
him.
And
what happens then? You know, what happens at that point?
So now, if Arzuma could be that guy, that would be big. If Arzuma and Thornton could step up and be there with Jenks, that would be huge. And then you have a guy like Massett who's going to actually make the start tomorrow, which is going to be interesting to see. And I'm kind of excited for him to make that start, because I'd like to see him get stretched out, because we really haven't seen him show that stuff that he has, you know, that everyone raved about him having.
Well, his first appearance, I think, and it seemed like he came in and he looked pretty good his first appearance. It was early in the season. I think it actually might have been – it was a Contreras start. It was actually the first game of the season, I think, when he came in, he threw like 3 or 4 scoreless innings, I believe, right? Because I think Contreras only lasted 2 innings. He came in, and he pitched rather well. And then
his biggest outing was when he replaced Mark Burley, who got hurt against the Indians.
But that was shortly after. But I think he also pitched in the Contreras start. Because I think in the first week or two of the season, because Burley got hurt early in the season, he had that one. I think it was a line drive right hit back at him, right?
Yeah.
So he came in 2 early appearances, and he looked pretty impressive pitching that long relief role. And then he kind of went on a break and kind of nowhere to be found, and he starts back up, and he hasn't really been himself, or he hasn't been too productive late. So maybe him starting tomorrow, getting stretched out, maybe he could be a little bit more productive, although it's not really an ideal situation for you to start in Cubs Sox. Although, not that the Cubs offense is a feared offense, it's still a Cubs Sox series, and that energy and that those nerves could potentially get to him. But that's, we can't get into that game because that's tomorrow, and that would just be for bad radio and shows and stuff like that.
Yeah, so we went to the bullpen, and I know one of the biggest things, whenever people talk about the bullpen, we've discussed the arms that's there, but a lot of times when it comes to the bullpen, it comes to the manager. And a lot of blame has been put on Ozzie Guillen for the way he's handled the bullpen, or the way he's handled the rotation, or the way he's done anything, really, the last season and a half. A lot of people have grown to doubt him and question him as a manager. I know last season I was consistently calling for Ozzie Guillen's head, saying that we could have gone farther if we had a better manager. However, this season I think he's done a good job. And it's funny because I'm in the minority in that statement, because I know a lot of people have been really doubting the way he's handled things and the way he's gone to guys like McDougal. But my thinking is, you know, in a key game, I'm going to go to my guy that's, you know, my good arm. And McDougal has been that. Even though he struggled lately, he's been that big arm. So you're going to go to him. And then McDougal's not going to do his job, and you're going to take the blame. And it's kind of a lose-lose situation anytime it comes to that.
Yeah.
My thinking is, as long as there's logic behind the move, it's a good move. Whether it works or not, it's a whole other story. But Ozzie Guillen so far has done a good job. I like the way that he sent Anderson down. And I like the comments he made about Brian Anderson afterwards. He actually was an adult about things, which is a big improvement for Ozzie Guillen. However, yesterday, he wasn't so much of an adult. A.J. Pinsinski, he called the Mike Norris Mike Norris Show.
Yeah, I forgot Mike about
North
this.
Show. And he complained.
He has a regular appearance on the show, I believe, every week. I think once a week he's on the show as a guest.
Yeah.
So I think he was just they were talking about him not starting that first game. Toby Hall, of course, made his first start on Friday, so they were talking about that, and he wasn't too happy. He wanted to play. He really didn't see a reason why he was sitting in. And I think the actual reasoning from the Sox standpoint was that they wanted to give him a rest, but he believes it was just because Toby Hall is back and Toby Hall is going to start. So, you know, Guillen eventually ended up calling up, and
long story short, here's the gist of his phone call. Fuck, 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 expletive, expletive, expletive. And Mike North went off on Guillen, and they really, I haven't heard that on the radio before. I just caught this today on ESPN, the Sports Center, or something like that. I heard the actual conversation, and wow, Mike North really did have some guts to go out and go after Guillen, and I think Mike North had very valid points. I don't like Mike North. You don't like Mike North. We have our reasons for not liking Mike North. We think he's a douchebag. However, it was very uncalled for by Ozzie Guillen. No manager should call up and do things like that. And Ozzie's not going to apologize. And he has no reason to, in the sense of Pierzynski, I have no problem with Toby Hall playing, because I think Toby Hall is going to be a big reason if this offense can come around, because Toby Hall can help him against left-handed pitching.
That's what bothered me. I think bothering me more than the whole fact that Guillen called and was swearing and acting like a dummy. A.J. Pierzynski, it seems like, ever since Toby Hall has been on this team, he has been so offensive about his job, so defensive about his job. Like, he thinks Toby Hall is going to take his job away, and God forbid Toby Hall plays against a lefty who Pierzynski, for the most part, looks lost against. And considering how poorly Pierzynski has played this year, he should be the last one talking about, I should be playing. And it would just, Gustavo Molina was the backup catcher for this team. How many times did he play for the first month and a half? How many starts did he really get in?
16 at-bats until he got a hit, right? 16?
Yeah, but how many games did he actually start? Pierzynski was going out there every single night. So if Ozzie Guillen simply says, you know what, I'm going to have you sit because we have Toby Hall, why should A.J. Pierzynski be upset at all about that? Just deal with it. Don't make any comment about it. Toby Hall is the backup catcher. He was brought in to take some time away from you because he is a solid catcher too. Deal with it.
And the reality is, Toby Hall should also take at-bats away from Jim Thome. Because Jim Tomey's not that good against left-handed pitching as well. And you should want to keep these guys fresh. You want to keep A.J. fresh because A.J. really tired out during the long stretches of last season. And Tomey tired out a bit as well. And Tomey's obviously an injury risk. So you want to use Toby Hall and utilize him to your advantage. He's a very good hitter against left-handed pitching. He calls a good game, and we're going to see how his arm holds up and if teams are just going to run all over.
Through his first throw on Friday, he bounced it, I think, about it looked like maybe 3-4 feet short of where Juan Uribe was at second base. So his first throw wasn't too positive, but it was a perfect start. It was a perfect game to start him, considering it was Mark Burley on the mound. And if anyone gets on base, they're pretty dumb to actually run on him. So he wouldn't have been challenged much. But they're really going to have to watch to see where he starts, because Contreras, I think, is going to be starting Tuesday. You wonder if you have him you know, you have him catch Contreras, who has trouble holding guys on. So I think they're going to have to watch that. Maybe limit it to guys like a John Garland or a John Danks or something like that, because with Vasquez and Contreras, they have a tendency to kind of let guys run wild.
Holy crap. I got a new topic we're going to discuss in the third segment. And I completely, you know me, when I'm surfing the internet, when I hear you discussing things. And so I completely lost my train of thought. But, I mean, Pierzynski, while I don't like the way he's handled things, he is a consummate professional. He does a lot of good things for this team. And the team could use more of him right now. Because when I think when you're slumping, you look to guys like AJ Pierzynski who bring that attitude. They bring that fire. They bring that, you know, kind of that little spark that could, at any moment, if AJ does something big, you just see he pumps up the rest of the team. And he's had some big hits for this team this season.
But that's,
he had a big home run against the Yankees. He had a big home run against the Angels and then the game-winning hit against the Angels.
Yeah.
Later on, he's done some good things, and he's been a lot more motivated, it seems like, with Toby all here, in the sense of he's called a much better game this season than he did last season. He's been more so like he was 2 years ago when the pitching staff was better, and he's kept up a bit more. And he's obviously not perfect behind the plate. He's got a terrible arm back there, and he could use some more blocking pitches, and he's obviously not been the greatest hitter for the Sox this season, although he's been coming around lately. But I like his attitude, so it's hard for me to get on a guy like AJ. It really is.
Fair enough. Although I think those hits last week, I think the Sox had a few occasions last week where one or two plays could have jump-started the offense, and it has. I think it's all on an individual basis right now. Canerico and Dye have to figure things out on their own. Creedy has to figure things out on his own, because I'm not so sure if one play is going to really jump-start it, because that's how bad they look at times. Let's take the break, though. I think that's kind of your plan, right? We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about your the subject that you're very excited about.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of general sports stuff, just whatever the hell we want to talk about for about 10 minutes. And I got a story about me getting hurt. Another one.
We're back. Back with the very strange and awkward third segment. I don't think we ever actually have reached this point in the show, whether with Sox Talk on the air or this one. So this is kind of a new thing, and it's kind of tiring, because I know I had a pretty long day today. I actually laid some sod, had a couple baseball practices, so it was kind of a tiring day for me, and I'm about to go to sleep. But you apparently have a story to lift me up and to make me laugh, because you are now clumsy.
Yeah, I'm a klutz. Well, I have a good news story and a bad news story. The good news story, after getting my 15 stitches, I've had them out. Our season ended, obviously, I told everyone. Well, our new season began this week. It started earlier than I ever imagined. And we lost 3-2. But the good news was my first game back, goal! I delivered on the cross, put it in, tied the game up at 2 with like 3 minutes to go, and we blew the game. Point being, I'm God at soccer.
You're God at soccer? Holy
yes.
Shit.
But the funny story happened after soccer. I go out, spend some time with my buddies, go over to my buddy's place, and we see this skunk. Me and my friend are coming back from the grocery store. We're getting some food to barbecue at like 10:30 at night because we're all hungry. And so we see this skunk, and it's following us. And we already smelled that it's been spraying all over the place. It stinks. And it's literally following us within like 10 feet, walking along the cars, as where it's like a condo complex. And we're walking, and we're looking at each other, and the skunk goes right to my friend's front door. It's standing there. So we're like, shit, how are we going to get in? But on the other side of my friend's condo, there's a patio, and the patio's got like a wood fence that goes up. So I look at my buddy, and we both go, we got to make a dash for the patio and get up there and then go through the sliding door so the skunk doesn't spray us. So I take off. I'm sprinting like hell. Jump up, clear the fence, and hit the top of the fence because I'm going to jump off that and then go in. But my back foot catches the back part of the fence. because I was just running and jumping instead of doing my usual where you kind of push yourself over and do it. So my back foot hits, and I end up going kind of parallel to the concrete and do a little Superman. Crash! Down I go, landing on my elbow, and my whole body thuds on the concrete. But the best part is, my buddy behind me said all he heard was a thud. And he said it seemed like for 4 or 5 seconds he heard nothing, and it was just like silence. He had no idea how to react. And then all of a sudden he said he heard from like behind the patio, he just heard me laughing my ass off. As I get up because I'm Superman. I can fly, I can fall on concrete. It was a good story.
Where was the skunk?
The skunk was at my friend's front door. So it's not like it came up after I was laying on the concrete and sprayed me.
That would have
been horrible.
How'd you guys get rid of it?
We just didn't go out the front.
Did you call?
We didn't get rid of it.
Did you call anyone to catch it?
No.
Why?
I don't know who to call. Police?
Animal I think that's patrol. Something. Don't you call like 311? I know, like, I think in Chicago, I think you call 311 for stuff like that.
Yeah. Do I live in a big city like Chicago? No.
You live in Orange County.
Not yet.
You live in Orange County.
Do you ever see on Laguna Beach skunks?
Come on. Nothing bad happens in Orange County. So when it comes to a skunk, they'll have plenty of people to handle it.
Me getting 15 stitches, that's bad.
You guys have to get some people who are in charge of skunk control and, you know, just pay taxes for it.
What, like bear tax?
Yeah.
That's an important tax.
I like how you caught that.
I'm good with these Simpson things.
Mm-hmm. Although I don't like the Simpsons, I'm glad you caught that.
Yeah, I don't like the Simpsons.
I mean, not get the current ones. I think, what, are they on their 400th episode?
Yeah, I think they have an hour long, what do we do? Doing advertising for Fox now?
I didn't say anything about Fox. I didn't say Fox. You said Fox.
Or tomorrow night.
You said Fox.
Fox. Fox. Check it out. You want to know what commercials would sound like on our show?
Fox.
Check out Fox for the 400 Simpsons episode.
No, don't check it out.
Oh, wait. Don't buy tickets at StubHub.
What?
You want to pay us money? We'll advertise against your product. This is a horrible show.
I apologize.
Anyone that's still listening, you must really like us because we've been terrible so far in the show.
Well, this show, it'll never be good because of me. I get too tired and I lack motivation for it. So, exactly. You can make fun of me.
Oh, I have it so rough. You should be excited. Think of how many people would pay money to discuss sports with me. Think of how many people.
This is bad radio.
Because I am an expert.
This is bad
radio. And speaking of experts, FutureSox.com, we are the experts on White Sox minor league baseball. And we have released another couple editions of our top 25 list. I think we're getting down to the top 10, which is going to be released on Monday after my 2-month hiatus of being late. So check it out because
When was this supposed to be up?
Like 2 months ago.
2 months ago.
Yeah.
2 months
so
late.
We made some changes to the list to update them because some of the prospects have, you know, matured and developed. But I want to prove one thing. We are good experts because you know what? I've consistently, and the people at Future Sox have been consistently accurate.
Just lazy. You're good, but just lazy. Who was it? Who was it that dropped the ball? You? Was it Alex? Did Alex drop the ball? He dropped the ball,
Danny. Anyone other than me ever dropped the ball?
Was it Alex? Alex dropped the ball, I bet.
Yes.
It was Alex.
I've kind of, as the guy that owns Future Sox, I got to be the one that in the end takes the blame. So when Alex Ernst doesn't write stuff, when
but it was Alex.
Do stuff,
it was Alex.
Yeah, when he doesn't do stuff, I kind of admit to it, acting it's like it's my fault. But it took him like 3 months to get his write-ups to me.
See,
how am I supposed to get stuff out?
I
kind of
thought so.
When I have douchebags Alex, not
you know, certain
on.
Guys, they just have that character. He seems like that type of guy. He just has that character
shady.
Where very very shady, very lazy. And it's all Alex Ernst's fault that the top 25 list wasn't put up in time. And it's now happening in the middle of the season where literally a week from now, a guy could have a good week and he could probably jump up 5 spots, yeah?
Exactly. Right? He could be the number one prospect.
See?
4 for 4, number one.
So
number
by the time prospect. You get to your number one might have actually been your number 20.
Exactly. It's all Alex's fault.
Now, I know you have some comments about the Chicago Bulls whose season ended this past, what was it? Was it Friday? Was it Friday? Or no, Thursday.
Thursday
their season
Thursday
ended.
Night.
And that was kind of sad, but you kind of expected. I mean, coming back 3-0 against the Detroit Pistons. The Detroit Pistons. They're not
pigeons.
It was
a poetic ending, though, because the team, after going down 3-0, I think
the team should be called
the
Pigeons. That would be
Bulls.
Very, very classic. Pigeons.
Yeah. Throw some bread on the
pigeons
court.
Are pretty rootless animals, especially Chicago pigeons. Yeah, go on about the Bulls.
Anyway, about basketball. You know, about the Bulls. They actually ended up impressing me. I was real pissed. I thought, you know, it was disgusting, that 3-0 deficit. But they came back, and they battled back. They made it 3-2, and they had a shot to send it to Game 7. I actually thought they were going to send it to Game 7. I started really to believe. But regardless, there are going to be some interesting changes, and you got to get your asses to TalkBulls.com to follow these changes, because it's going to be curious. Are they going to go for a bigger shooting guard? Because let's be honest, those three games they lost, the first three, a lot of it came down to the fact that they got out-muscled because Ben Gordon has to defend someone. So if teams have two guards, they're really in trouble if they have two good guards. Because Kirk Heinrich can't take both of them, so Ben Gordon's going to have to play one of them. And if Ben Gordon's not doing anything offensively, he's really going to be a liability when he can't defend
another guard. That's why whenever you have the debate of – you obviously have Dang and Gordon. You say, okay, you have to get rid of one of them. I think it's always got to be Gordon, because I think Gordon can be stopped on certain nights, whereas Dang, he looks like he's almost turning into a player where, unless he's facing a guy like Tayshaun Prince, who is just a great player in my mind, he's going to be able to score on most forwards or more small forwards in the league.
Yeah, and if a big man guards Dang, he's going to be able to take the game outside and hit his jump shots, because he's really gotten good with that short mid-range game. And then you have a guy like Heinrich, who really
he has some work to do, but he's still got a lot of ways to go.
But he's a very good all-around player, and he's got the ability to be a great point guard in this league. He's got the ability to be a great player in this league for what he does and everything he can do, because he's a great defensive player. He knows how to run the offense. He just needs to kind of take more initiative, put more upon himself, so to speak, because he's a good shooter.
From a defensive standpoint, I think he's pretty damn good right now, so I'm not necessarily sure how much improvement he's got to make in that. But the offensive standpoint, I think he does got to get better. I think there's at times when I'm not really good with the basketball discussion or even baseball discussion, apparently, but whenever he gets in the offense, it seems like he has a tendency to dribble the ball a little bit too much. Just sometimes just relax, pass the ball off. I know at the end of the game, he was just dribbling around just randomly, just going in circles where you kind of just hope he would finally actually make a pass and try to actually score something. But
I think that's where the Bulls are going to have to make some adjustments. And I think Nocioni is probably going to be part of a sign-and-trade package that gets him a power forward. Maybe they get P.J. Brown involved in that deal as well, who's a free agent who may want to play another season. And then you decide on whether Ben Gordon is going to be your guard or not. Yeah. Because the one thing Kirk Heinrich lacks, because he has the ability to be a really great player if he had a Karl Malone next to him or a big man that can do something, because Heinrich loves going in the key and moving around, and he'll pass it to Ben Wallace, who's actually kind of open, but since Wallace has no offensive game, he won't put it in. And he's never had like a power forward even next to him. He's never had a scoring low post big man to put with him.
Yeah.
Because if you had that, he would be such a weapon, because he would drive in and the defense would have to either collapse on him. If they do, he could get it to an offensive big who puts it in.
Now, when Heinrich
can get in and get some more legs.
Now when he drives, he's either got a layup or he's got to pass it out behind the three-point line or a guy to a Dang who's maybe, you know, 18 feet away or whatever. He can't really hand it off to a big man because they really don't have any. And as far as Wallace goes, I just wish the guy would actually try to dunk the ball sometimes when he has right underneath the basket instead of trying to put up some weird-ass layup in which he usually misses. You have anything else you want to talk about? Anything?
Yeah, we got predictions to make.
On what?
The number one sports story of the day.
Oh, come on. Let's not do this.
The beginning of the WNBA season. Tip-off was today.
Come on, please.
And I want to know who's going to win, Mario. Who? What are your predictions? I predict bad basketball will be played.
Is that an Albuquerque team?
I don't know. I know that L.A. has the Sparks. Chicago has I don't know who.
What about Des Moines?
I don't know. I just predict the bad basketball will be played.
New Mexico? Do they got a team? New Mexico?
Yes.
Montana. I want the team from Montana to win.
Montana? The Great Falls women? The Great Falls Lady Warriors.
See, don't be that person to make fun of WNBA. I mean, that's not nice.
I do, because I don't want it on TV. Put it on the Women's Channel. Don't put it on ESPN.
Put it on Wii.
Yes. Yes. It's not sports. Golf is not sports. I don't want golf on mainstream sports.
How many channels does ESPN have?
They could put it on ESPN Deportes. I don't care if they do.
How many channels does ESPN have?
Two.
Two?
Plus ESPN News.
I mean, you can't just... It's a three-hour game, right? You can't... 3 hours? What's the big deal? It's a 24-hour network. It's 24 hours of sports.
Basketball is the fact that a year ago the White Sox had opening day. It was supposed to be in high definition. And the game was on ESPN2, and they had women's basketball in HD. Ever since then, I will bash the sport because it takes up my good programming that I like
to watch. What would you have rather watched today on ESPN while women's basketball was on?
Baseball? Not that they have the rights to the day baseball games.
Just any game.
Yes, any baseball game. The 80th rerun of World Series of Poker.
Wow, you're putting it behind the 80th rerun of World Series Poker.
Billiards. World Series of Billiards. There's a little thing called the Rock, Paper, Scissors contest going on in Vegas.
I was thinking, I'm like, he's going to throw it out there. He's going to go to Rock, Paper, Scissors, and you did.
I mean, I want to know. Does Rock beat Paper, or does Paper beat Rock? Because no one beats Rocky. I'm making a WWE reference.
You don't know how exhausted I am right now.
And I'm going to make you more exhausted because we have other news. Roger Clemens. Well, this show is 2 weeks old, but Mario Scalise, he has things to say about Clemens. He's a fan of Roger Clemens. Roger Clemens is the best pitcher in Mario Scalise's mind. He's a great player. So, Mario, what do you think now that the Rocket is back in the American League?
You know me that well.
I do.
You know what? Roger Clemens' career, he's a Hall of Famer without question, and he's one of the best pitchers, I might even say, ever. But I hate him as a person, even though I never met him. I don't like him as a person. I don't like him... And over the past few years, I just don't think he's that good of a pitcher anymore. And I think the Yankees signing him was a sign of desperation, without question, especially the fact that he's probably not even going to be traveling with this team. Think of that. The Yankees of 2 years ago wouldn't have allowed something like that. You're on the Yankees, you go by Yankees rules, but no more, because they are a team that's desperate for something. And Roger Clemens throwing five innings, that's huge for them. That's huge.
You say it's a desperation move, but when you're 10.5 games behind the Red Sox, and the Red Sox are a very, very good baseball team, they have great pitching right now. It's performing well, and they have a good offense. Isn't that the time when you make desperate moves? Desperate times call for desperate desires, or whatever the hell the saying goes.
Desperate measures. Desperate desires?
Whatever.
A desire isn't a move.
That was the movie I watched last night.
What movie?
Desperate Desires.
That doesn't sound like a very, very...
It is a family show.
It's not a PG movie, I see. PG-13. Roger, come on. It's a desperate... The guy's going to pitch how many starts? He's probably going to make, 20 starts? I think he's going to be basically making like $1 million a start. And you've seen him last year. Last year, I don't think he went past 7 innings one time last year. So when you look at his age, when you look at the fact that he's going to the American League and he's no longer in the National League Central with all those great offenses... He's going to pitch about 5 innings, maybe 6 innings to start. And then after those 5-6 innings, they're going to have to go to their bullpen. And in case you don't know, Mariano Rivera is no longer the pitcher he used to be. So that's great that they have a guy who's going to pitch very, very good for 5 innings. But after that, they're going to have to bring someone else in. And the next game, somebody's going to have to pitch for them. And the game before Roger Clemens pitched, somebody's going to have to pitch for him. This team is not going to go anywhere. They will not. Because that rotation, with or without Roger Clemens, is not very good. Simple.
Now, that we can agree on. I think Roger Clemens will help the Yankees finish respectably in second place.
No, I don't think he's going to help him. You know why? He's not going to get wins. I would be shocked if he picks up any wins. Listen, if the Yankees' offense, which has the capabilities of scoring 10-15 runs, if they score 10-15 runs for Roger Clemens, he will pick up wins. And I'm not saying that because Roger Clemens is going to give up 9 runs. What I'm saying is that he's not going to go deep in the games. And if he doesn't go deep in the games, the Yankees' bullpen is going to give up some runs. So they better have a good cushion. So if the Yankees' offense provides them with a lot of offense so the bullpen can't blow it, yes, he will get them some wins.
Yeah, but they will. I completely agree with you. They will not make the playoffs. We both said this at the beginning. I think you agreed with me on that in the beginning of the season.
Well, no, you know what? Because I wasn't too fond of the Red Sox either.
I wasn't too fond of the Red Sox. I was the one that was.
I still don't think I'm too fond of the Red Sox.
Yeah, that just red color just doesn't go well with the Italian genes, does it?
I think for the first time though, my skin's starting to burn. Been out in the sun a little bit too much. I think I might have to stop it.
Christ, we get into your medical. People only care about my stitches. They don't care about your sunburn, all right? They don't care.
It's nice in Chicago. It's nice in Chicago, Jace. We're up to 70.
You had Roger Clemens.
We're up to 70 degrees, Jace.
And so, you have Roger Clemens, and then in the NFL, you have Brett Favre. So my theory is Brett Favre, do you feel the same way about him? And him asking for these, special treatment, or him kind of sticking around and kind of playing it by ear whether he's going to come back?
What do you mean? Do I agree with him coming back? Should he retire?
Well, do you agree with his comments? I know there was some talk about a trade, and he's kind of backed off of that. I mean, does Brett Favre irritate you like Roger Clemens irritates you?
Yeah, but the fact is Roger Clemens does it a lot. And the fact
Brett
that
Favre,
he has
the last few seasons has always been like, I may retire.
I may retire. I know.
However,
but in Roger Clemens' case,
he's
waiting a month into the season. He completely tied the hands of the Houston Astros last year by saying, well, I don't know if I want to come back. I may come back. Meanwhile, the Houston Astros are thinking, well, if you do come back, that's $20 million on our payroll. If you don't come back, we could sign someone else. But since you're taking too much time, we can't sign someone else. So we're really banking on you coming back. He was trying to essentially fuck the Houston Astros. I swore for the first time today he was trying to screw the Houston Astros last year. Whereas Brett Favre's case, yeah, he's probably holding up the Packers because I'm sure they would like to get on and move on without him. But it's still different. So, plus, Roger Clemens just seems like a jerk overall, whereas Brett Favre doesn't seem like so much of a jerk.
Well, just picture this. Brett Favre in a Chicago Bears uniform, winning 2 Super Bowls and then retiring and going into the Hall of Fame as a Bear. That is what I would like to see happen. It won't. But just throwing it out there. Be a beautiful thing. Him throwing bullets, Grossman learning under him, Grossman coming in and winning another 3 Super Bowls. The Bears win 5 Super Bowls in a row. Yep, those are the visions of grandeur I have in my mind.
Super Bowls in a row.
Chicago Bears football. Hey, if you're going to dream, you dream big.
So no longer is this a Southside report because we spent, I think, just as much time talking about non-White Sox stuff then as, and even when we were talking about White Sox stuff, we really weren't. Well, I think we got to go. I think it's time to call this a show. And hopefully, and I've said this many times over the past year, hopefully we could be back on next week. Not sure how we're going to do this from here on out. I'm thinking next week maybe somebody
Ernst
else.
Ernst is going to be back. Ernst will be on next week. We'll get a future Sox.
You got to figure that
report.
Out.
The top 25 will be out, so we'll kind of run through that. The entire top 25 will be done. So we'll be there for that. We hope you enjoyed this version of the show. It was a pretty shitty show as far as I'm concerned. Glad you stuck with us if you're listening to this.
We have many things we have to improve on. And one thing people do have to realize, and I kind of said this in the beginning of the show, I am in Chicago. Jason is in California. It's kind of difficult to do a show with two people in two different cities. So you people who are having problems with us, you can go scratch, you jagoffs.
We're ending it on that.
No, screw them. Screw them, Jace. They could kiss my ass.
I'm with you. Unless they want to pay us lots of money. In which case, I will kiss their ass.
All right, well, we'll see you next week. Enjoy Fox.